You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. The Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation is once again accepting scholarship applications, and Northern New Mexico residents are invited to apply. Deadline for undergraduate scholarships is the 21st of January, 2020. Deadline for Career Pathways Scholarships in support of two-year degrees, certificates, and trades is November 17, 2019. Criteria and application for both may be found at lanlfoundation.org/scholarships. I'm delighted to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Joan Myers. She's a photographer, and her new book is called Where the Buffalo Roam, Images of the New West. It has an essay by art historian Lucy Lepard, and also an essay by the author, the photographer Joan Myers. Joan and Lucy will be in conversation at Collected Works Bookstore on Tuesday, November 5th at 6 o'clock right here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's a pleasure to be back.
It's great to have you back. And this is a book, it's a collection of photographs that you made over many decades, about four decades, is that right?
That's right. The photographs go back to the very beginning of my photographic career.
Yeah, and they're pictures of the American West, not so much about sort of beautiful, unspoiled, pristine landscapes, if those even still exist, and to the extent they do, but this is much more about the human presence on the land and the mythologies of the West. Tell us about the idea and the process by which this book came together.
Well, as you say, I started photographing in the West when I first started photography. But then I've done many other projects over the last decades. And it was just recently that I decided that it would be a good idea to collect some of the work that from the West and maybe put it into book form. And when I started to pull that work out, and then in my sort of travels here and there around the West, I started taking pictures again. And before I knew it, I actually had quite a different vision of the West from what I had when I started. So the book is a combination of different points of view as well over a long period of time.
In the beginning, we see these black and white photographs, which are, I think the way you put it was a little less cynical than the current photographs. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but maybe a little bit more sort of nature and landscapes and people. And as it goes on, there's a lot of kind of media imagery. And like, for example, John Wayne plays a role in several of the photographs, but it's kind of like a disintegrating John Wayne. I've been watching this TV show. I don't know if you or any of your listeners have seen it. It's called American Gods. It's also a wonderful book by Neil Gaiman. And it reminds me of this theme of when fewer and fewer people worship the old gods, they lose their power. And I was thinking of that with the John Wayne.
I think that's true. I mean, John Wayne has become this sort of cultural icon that's up there in cardboard, and it's no longer, the great macho guy of the American West cowboy film. But when I started out back in the 70s photographing the West, I was using a view camera shooting black and white film, and I still was interested in the human part of the landscape. I photographed roads going through these beautiful landscapes, and I didn't mind putting in telephone wires. I was kind of always skeptical of the Ansel Adams approach to photographing the West. But more recently, it's changed from that point of view as well. I think early on, I really felt that the human traces on the landscape would eventually disappear and the landscape would be pristine once more. Well, nobody believes that anymore. So 40 years makes a real difference in how you look at the culture and what's happened to the climate and the landscape.
You spend a lot of time in and around Indian country, and there are a lot of contrasts, like a teepee with the word espresso on it, and like images of native people juxtaposed with, hair salons and beer signs and so on. And honestly, I was looking at these photographs and leafing through this book, which is just a beautiful book, and I didn't know how to feel about them. Like, are they funny? Are you making fun of them? Do you love them? Like, and I wondered sort of how you felt.
I had many different feelings, just as you did, when I saw these places. I mean, a lot of them were funny to start with, but the more I looked, there was an underlying layer that was not so funny, which is, how is this community surviving? That teepee actually was on the Blackfoot Reservation up in Browning, Montana. And it's not a happy place. This is a really challenging place to live. So they're doing the best they can with these signs. They're hoping to get a few tourists. It's not really all that funny.
Right. And yet there are certain photographs that do have that humor, and just these juxtapositions of like a mural of a landscape, you know, a beautiful landscape, but it's kind of a cheesy mural and there's a dumpster in front.
That's right. That's right. Exactly right. And so you can laugh. You know, some of them are sad, actually.
Yeah.
And some of them you sort of don't know how to react. There's a picture of the indigenous hair salon in Shiprock.
Yeah.
Shiprock, of course, is all sort of a real Navajo town. And, you know, what does it mean? Who ran this indigenous hair salon in Shiprock? I don't know. You know, was that an Anglo? Was that a Navajo? How did people feel about that in Shiprock?
Well, that's what I was wondering, too, because you've got a lot of people. I mean, not a lot, but you've got people in some of the photographs, like people in restaurants, people on the street, and so on. And I was wondering, like, what kind of relationships or connections did you make with the people as you were out photographing?
Sometimes I made connections, and sometimes I was a street photographer and just shot and moved on. I did both. I always enjoy talking to people when there's the opportunity to do that, but sometimes if you see a picture, you take it, whether there's time to talk to that person or not.
Do you then have to ask their permission to use the picture?
Well, they're all in public places. I'm not using their images to put them on cups to sell in the market. You know, these are our fine art photographs in a book. So, no, they do not have permission to do that. If I were going to use them commercially, I certainly would have to do that.
Right, right. Talk more about the murals, because they really do play a major role in this book. What drew you about, like, describe some of them. I mean, this is audio, so people can't see what we're talking about. So give us sort of a sense of these many murals in the book.
Well, one of my favorites actually is of a man, sort of a cowboy on a horse in a parking lot. And the mural is of the cowboy on the horse, and he's riding down, and he basically, it looks like he's about to come down onto the parking lot with its yellow lines. But what was interesting to me about the murals in general was that I found them in all kinds of small towns all over the West. And I found, actually, that there are now itinerant mural painters who go from one town to another. For instance, Tucumcari has a lot of murals in New Mexico, and I met the mural painter there. And then I ran into him in Benson, Arizona, and he basically got a job in Benson, and then last I heard they were wanting him to come back to Tucumcari. But I think that it's interesting because you have these small towns that don't have a lot going for them. Often they have now fairly anonymous architecture. There's nothing personal left in the architecture and signs or anything. It all looks very sort of generic in small towns, boxy. And so I think it's sort of a self-preservation to put up a mural on a wall in your town, and you have something else to look at other than these really boring buildings.
Do you feel like there's sort of pride in the murals, or that they're expressive of place in a certain way? Are they cliches? Like,
everybody that I spoke to in small towns with murals was very proud of their murals. So I think that's probably goes through everything, but they are often cliches. I mean, they're pictures of cowboys riding into the sunset.
Right.
And, you know, these towns don't have a lot of cowboys and cattle in them anymore. They don't have any at all. So It's a way of connecting to history, I suppose, to some degree, and reminding themselves that life used to be a little different from how it is now, and it doesn't feel often really good right now.
And the cowboy thing is so mixed because the reality of the cowboy life, as I many years ago spoke to a cowboy historian who said there was not one thing romantic about it. It was just an incredibly hard life, and it got romanticized through the movies. So
that's right. And literature as well, the Westerns.
Exactly. And so you have this kind of like self-romanticization, and then you don't even, I mean, you get sort of confused about like myth and reality.
Yes, they're really not accurate depictions of the reality for people in that area. We know that. I mean, there may be accurate depictions of how Hollywood would portray life in that area if Hollywood came in and did a movie. So, you know, myth is not a simple thing. It's got lots of layers.
When I first moved to Santa Fe, I took some classes at the Institute of American Indian Arts, and I had a wonderful teacher there, a drawing teacher, and I'm not Native, but most of the people in the class were Native kids, and she taught a class on cliches and explained what a cliche was, had everybody bring some cliched thing in. And later I asked her, I said, why are you teaching? I mean, it made sense, but, you know, why are you teaching class on cliches? She said, I had once in my class a Native student who was making a drawing of a coyote howling at the moon, and then a white student saying, that's a cliche, and the Native student was saying, no, that's my culture, and she was tearing her hair out. Like, what do you do?
That's right. And I think more and more we live in a sort of illusion, a fantasy world to some degree. You know, we spend a lot of our time looking at social media and a variety of digital media that are not real. They're pixels. And you can create any kind of illusion that way. So cliches tend to get magnified. They become memes and whatever in our new world. So, you know, as a photographer, I'm really interested in going back to what's grounding, what's underneath all this.
And so what is underneath all this?
What's underneath all this is a very contradictory and complex world here in the West, because some things are doing very well. A lot of rural areas in the American West are not doing well at all. Main streets are boarded up. I mean, I've traveled all over during the last 7 or 8 years and been really distressed to see how much people struggle. And I may not agree with the political choices they've made as a result of that struggle, but I'm very, you know, very empathetic to their needs and the fact that they don't really have a lot of opportunities. They can't see how their kids are going to go to college. The nearest hospital's 100 miles away. Dollar and Walmart have destroyed their local department stores and grocery stores. You know, they're really struggling.
And some of the pictures in your book really kind of underline how incredibly hard it is to make a living because, I mean, the West is so arid. There's this one particular photograph of horses in a kind of rickety wooden corral against these giant buttes. I think it's a black and white picture. And arid landscape all around, arid landscape inside of this little corral. And these poor horses and the sun beating down on them. And you think, it's an act of futility almost to try to do anything here with so little water. And yet here we are trying to scratch out. I mean, here in Santa Fe, you know, it's kind of a valley, but in so many parts where it's just so dry, yet people are there trying to scratch out a living.
Yeah, I mean, and they have been for a long time. And they were much more successful at it than they have been recently. Yeah, and with climate changing, it's certainly going to get more difficult all over the West.
What was the process like for you of doing what must have been a whole lot of road trips?
Well, I love road trips. I mean, that's a pleasure to me. The previous projects I'd done had involved travel to distant places, so I was really ready to do something that you could hop in the car. Usually my husband would come along. You could take along some nibbles to eat and all camera gear you wanted and, you know, books to read, exercise equipment, whatever you wanted to take. And you didn't have to worry about weight or anybody worrying about anything. You didn't have to go to airports. It was great. So I did a lot of fairly short trips, a couple weeks, maybe a month, up to, say, Montana, the Dakotas, the farthest places away. Places like the Four Corners area are really great because you can go up there for a week and, you know, cover a lot of ground. And what I found was that I never knew when a photograph was going to appear. In other bodies of work, I've really sort of defined in advance a lot of times what I was going to shoot. But in this project, things just happened.
Give us an example.
Well, I remember it was actually one road trip. The first morning out, we left the house very early and before breakfast. And so we decided to stop in Española, which is only half an hour away, for breakfast. And went into this cafe. And here was this incredible scene of a mural on the wall. And these two guys drinking coffee. And it was a photograph at 7:30 in the morning.
There's one that cracks me up in Española, a restaurant of some people sitting at a table, and behind them is the image of Michelangelo's God.
That's it. That's it. Right.
The giving hands. Life to Adam, the hands, you know, yes. the fingers.
The fingers.
And it's so weird.
I mean, who would find this in an Española cafe with people eating their red chili
right.
breakfast burritos?
It's hilarious and strange and... I found myself wondering and just thinking about, like, what if I choose not to see these as contrasts, but just to see them as all part of our big shared world culture?
That's exactly right. I think that's what they're mainly about, is we do live in a very complicated world, and it has many layers. We tend to see one layer, which is what we're doing today, or maybe... you know, who we want to vote for and our political issues at the moment. But as a photographer, I really like to see things in almost geologic time, not quite that, but the layers of history that go back a long way. So what are these people doing there? Why are they sitting at this table? Where did this mural come from? I don't have the answers to those questions, but the photograph manages to get it all in there.
Right. There's a quotation in Lucy Lepard's essay where she quotes Alexis de Tocqueville, who wrote this two-volume book called Democracy in America in the early 19th century. And the quote is, "History is a gallery of pictures in which there are very few originals and many copies." And I thought that was such a great quotation to kind of express what's going on in this book, because there are so many of the images are... you know, turn to almost any page. They're sort of like replicas of reality, like the cowboy image or teepees that are sort of fakish teepees. Or there even is a coyote howling at the moon and things like that. And so the whole book sort of gives you space to contemplate and really question, what do we really know about anything that we're looking at? What do we know for sure?
Yes, and the answer is we know some things and lots of things we don't know. And I tried to put all that into these photographs. So in some ways, they're more complicated photographs than what I have done before. They're not quick looks. They're not the sort of thing that you shoot on your cell phone and can put up on social media. They have layers, and I don't know if that's good or bad. It's a little out of fashion today because we tend to prefer things that we can see quickly. But the truth is, real life is very complicated, and we're better off if we take the time to really look at all the layers.
I think we may be coming around again to preferring things that actually take some attention.
You think so?
I do. I mean, people... listen to this program, for example, which is a longer form, and people are listening to other podcasts and radio shows that are long-form conversations, for example. I mean, that's my medium, so that's what I know. But with photographs, too, I think that the time that one has to take to, you know, look through this book and then look through it again and think about how it resonates with one's own experience. And actually, that's something that I wanted to ask you about. You grew up in the Midwest, but you spent a lot of time in the West when you were young. And I imagine that you're drawing on your own childhood to some extent.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I grew up, yes, in Iowa, but I was, as soon as I could leave Iowa, I did. I went to school on the West Coast, but along the way, every summer, we went to Colorado from Iowa. There was a family cabin outside of Colorado Springs, and we would spend all summer there. And it was a fairly primitive cabin that went back to my grandparents, and there were four kids, and my father always departed and went back to work, leaving my mother and the four kids for the summer. So we were kind of left on our own. I was the oldest, and I got to kind of go and do whatever I wanted. I could take little paths that led up the mountain, and nobody paid much attention. There weren't a lot of restrictions. When I got a little older, I went down to the stables and got a job helping out at the stables and riding horses up the mountains. And it was kind of an ideal summer childhood. Very free, and there were square dances in the little town. There were a lot of people there from Texas and Oklahoma that had houses in that area. So it was kind of a very Western, Southwestern feel to it. And I loved that. I thought that was just terrific. In comparison, going back home to the Midwest was a lot tighter. And I think that that sense of freedom and roaming around the West is something that's gone through my whole life.
And I think it is reflected in the book that you're kind of both an insider and an outsider. I mean, I feel like these photographs have a lot of affection. There was a famous exhibition by the photographer Richard Avedon. It was more than 30 years ago now, I think, portraits of people in the American West. And they were so, I remember seeing that, and they were so mean, and they were so out of context, and they were so condescending. And this isn't that at all. But at the same time, you do have sort of an outsider's perspective that allows you to see something fresh that people who are living there probably wouldn't be able to do.
I think photographers always see from the outside. You know, certainly some photographers photographed inside a culture. But, you know, part of what it means to be a photographer is that you've got to step back and take a picture of something. And that requires you to look at it from a perspective that's outside whatever it is.
Did you find, I mean, you said earlier that some pictures really just made themselves available to you, and suddenly there it was, and there you were. Were there other photographs where you kind of had to wait for the light to change and, you know, just kind of like wait until the moment was right or come back to it?
Certainly, yes, there were definitely pictures like that. I mean, there's always pictures like that, and hopefully you can get back to retake that photograph under another situation. And some places are close by, and I return to them on general principles, and photographs sometimes got better, and sometimes they didn't get better as time went on. But, you know, these are not the grand landscapes where you're waiting until sunset or sunrise to take your picture. They're really not. That's a great way to shoot, but I have a husband, I'm traveling, I can't, you know, that's just not conducive to my lifestyle to do that. And this work, there was no reason particularly to do that. I didn't want to romanticize these murals or towns or places. I wanted them to look just like they looked in the middle of the day.
How does it feel to have this done? I mean, it seems like it represents a big piece of your life's work and of your own kind of sensibility.
It feels good. I'm really delighted with the book. I went on press. It was a pleasure to see it all kind of wrapped up, and it turned out, I think, really exactly what I wanted it to look like. So I feel just great about that. I'm not sure it's the end, however, because I continue to work. And in this case of this particular book, there's so many outtakes and different images connected to it that, I don't know, I'm still shooting.
Well, that gives us something to look forward to.
Well, thank you.
Joan Meyer's new book is called Where the Buffalo Roam, Images of the New West. It has an essay in it by Lucy Lepard, and Lucy Lepard and Joan Meyer will be at Collected Works Bookstore on Tuesday, November 5th at 6 o'clock. In a conversation about the book and about the themes that are brought up by the book, Joan Meyer, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Support for the Radio Cafe comes from the Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation by Dr. Eve L. Ewing with Wayne Au on Wednesday, November 13th at 7 o'clock at the Lensic. Writer and sociologist Dr. Eve L. Ewing, an assistant professor at the University of Chicago, creates multiple genres and forms: academic writing and scholarship, teaching, cultural organizing, poetry, comic book, and fiction. Her research is focused on the impact of racism, social inequality, and urban policy on American public schools and young people. She is the author, most recently, of the poetry collection 1919, the nonfiction work Ghosts in the Schoolyard, Racism and School Closings on Chicago's South Side, and the Ironheart series for Marvel Comics. Tickets available at the Lensic, 988-1234, or lensic.org. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Supporting social and emotional needs of students and teachers, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanl Foundation for supporting the Radio Cafe. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.